Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome, everybody. I hope everybody is having a good Tuesday. Let's pull the screen up here. I'm not there. What's going on? It's really weird. Okay. There's an invisible chair. Huh. It's quite odd. Let's see if we can fix that. Okay. Okay, chair is no longer invisible. I don't know what that was. Sorry. Alrighty, folks, welcome. It is Tuesday. We are live on GTV, Odyssey, and Speak Free Radio. You guys can find me on all the platforms today. We got a lot of people in the chat room already, so let's say hello to some people. I'll do GTV first today. We've got a 4Play Junkie, welcome, brother. Phoenix and Jag, welcome, guys. Hope you guys are having a good week so far. Over on the Odyssey, we got Rights for Whites. By the way, thank you very much for your words. I do appreciate that. Gerchman, think I'm saying that correctly. Das Ende, Honda Ricer, and Owie. Welcome, guys. Welcome. I hope everybody is having an enthusiastic and heartwarming week. We've got a very low key kind of a stream today. We're just going to do a. Excuse me, I have a sneeze. Anyways, we're going to be doing a little bit of a discussion stream. I have a couple things I want to talk about. We're actually going to go into Richard Nixon a little bit, just a little bit, okay? Actually, probably not a little bit, probably a lot. Today will most likely be a deep dive on Richard Nixon. I think that's going to be the general theme of today's stream. Unstable at best. Thank you very much for saying that. That's incredible to hear, and that is very Aryan of you, my friend. Can we get the Romans in the chat for unstable at best? That's very commendable. I do appreciate that. We are all certainly subject and liable to mistakes and lack in discipline from time to time, and it's very good that we are willing to openly acknowledge those things and say that. That I have a lot of respect for that, my friend. Thank you. Okay, before we do anything, I just want to get into the schedule as usual, kind of go over what we're doing for the week. So obviously today is the Speak Free Radio stream. We're live every Tuesday on Speak Free Radio from 5 to 7, and that encompasses my other platforms as well, including Odyssey and GTV. Tomorrow we'll be taking the day off. I won't be doing anything tomorrow. I'm actually going to spend probably all of tomorrow researching writing out and frameworking my next Logos Academy video, which I'm not going to expose what that is yet. I'm going to let it come. Actually, if you guys have been watching for a while, you'll know what that is. We discussed this a very long time ago. I said it was kind of what I want it to be, the eighth episode, and the hint is this is going to be a much longer episode. So it's going to be probably, I would shoot roughly about an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's going to be quite a long episode. Because it's going to be all-encompassing. I want to cover every piece and make sure I don't miss anything. It's very important. Okay, on Thursday, we're going to be live at 5 p.m. Eastern. I was hoping to have Napalm join me, but unfortunately, our schedules are conflicting a little bit. He's not able to do it as early as I need to go live. I have dinner plans later in the evening, so we just can't make that work. So I probably won't be doing a Napalm stream until next week, possibly even the week after. It just depends on how those schedules collide. Friday, as usual, we're going to be joining G-Man at 1 p.m. Eastern in the afternoon on his show, The Perfect Triangle. And then in the evening, I'm going to be going live with my own show at 6 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, we are going to be taking Saturday off. I have a lot of calls that I have scheduled that I would like to get done on Saturday. And Sunday is Easter. However, I'm not doing much for Easter. I might be going to a lunch or a early dinner, but I will be free afterwards, so I might pull up a stream. On Sunday, I'll just gauge it based off of kind of how the support goes throughout the week, how excited people seem, and then we'll just go from there. I'm not gonna get super into that. Honda, what are my thoughts about the Jewess on last stream? Do I trust her? Again, there's a rule number one: you never trust a Jew. That's just a all-encompassing rule. That's nothing against her particularly. It's not against a very subversive Jew like Al Goldstein. It's just the way it is. We've seen too many times in history them play the fence and play as Hitler says, the Jew of the people. Okay, so you can never actually fully trust one. I think she said some good things. I think she made some pretty genuine points that felt like they were not subversive or pre-thought. They seemed to come actually from the heart. So hopefully she is actually serious about what she says she is, and continues to push. That would be nice, right? But that's not something that I'm going to put my full faith in, right? I'm going to continue to sleep with one eye open. That's the smart thing to do. Right. So I don't think anybody was banned. I don't know. Stream good on GTV. A couple of people saying crashed. Let me know if it's good. Okay. So that's the schedule for the week. We're gonna go into just a cross promotion as usual. The way we start kind of every show. It's always important for me to do that and make sure people who are on one platform get connected on all of the platforms. The more you guys can connect with me, and the more you guys can share my work, the more we can kind of grow this base, this community, and continue this work in a larger fashion. So, the two main platforms to follow me on that are the absolute most important, where you can really keep up to date with everything that I have going on, would be Gab and Twitter. Gab, you can follow me at Logos Revealed, and on Twitter, you can follow me at Logos Revealed with an I at the end of it. It's Logos Revealed I. Unfortunately, Logos Revealed was taken, so I was unable to get that. I just got the blue check mark on Twitter. We're all good on that end. I am now able to upload long form content on there, so I've been uploading the Logos Academy series. If you guys want to actually go ahead onto Twitter and share those, that really helps me, helps spread this work into the normie sphere a little bit. So let me just post these. That's the link to my Twitter in the chat there. Obviously, we are on Speak Free Radio today. Tuesdays are the designated Speak Free Radio day. So if you're driving in the car and you can't watch physically, and you just want to listen in, Speak Free Radio is a really good platform to do that. You can go over there. You can find me that way. For those who are watching on Speak Free Radio, all of my links are set up on Speak Free Radio where you can click straight through them. But if you don't want to do that, or if you don't know how to do that, you can find me on Odyssey at Logos Revealed. That's where you'll find really the large archive of all of my work, interviews, regular podcast type streams like this. We've got all kinds of interview videos, just guest shows. We've got the Logos Academy series on there, things of that sort. You got rid of your Gab foreplay? I saw a lot of people are getting rid of the Gab. It's a shame, but I'm going to keep it. Someone was actually kind enough to gift me Gab Pro, so I can post long form content on there as well. So I've been doing that. Do you guys hear my dog? Definitely. All right, buddy. You're okay. Sorry about that. Okay, so that's everything for cross promotion. Obviously, as usual, always has to be said, it's kind of rhetorical, but if you guys do want to support this show and keep this show going, it is always greatly appreciated. And it is unfortunately in this modern Jewish paradigm something of necessity that I must say at the beginning of every show and throughout every show. You guys can do so in the links in the description underneath the GTV and the Odyssey streams. We've got the crypto wallets, we've got Odyssey. You can donate straight through there, and then we also have Entropy for the alerts, which will come up on screen with a message. That's the best way to super chat. Okay, let's get into our topic for today. We're going to talk about Richard Nixon a little bit. Okay, so I got a couple things I want to talk about, a few things that I want to pull up. I think first things first. I'm going to be very interactive with the chat today, and today is going to be more of a visual show than usual. You can still participate audibly. It will be bearable, but it will be a little bit better if you are participating visually. So I do recommend, if you're not in the Odyssey or the GTV streams, you do hop over for this show, because this is going to be a little more visible. So let's pull this up. Yeah, Andy, I'm feeling much better for certain. Okay, so before we pull this up, one in the chat room, if you guys are familiar, and by familiar I mean you've actually seen and heard the Nixon tapes. One if you are, two if you are not. One if you are, two if you are not. And we've certainly gone over this before on this show, but this is going to be much more in depth than the last one. Okay, we got ones and twos. That's good. That's good. See, it's always good to know if I do appreciate when you guys kind of participate in the chat in this way. It helps me know if it's worth going deeper into. If someone hasn't seen it at all, I can catch these people up. That's the idea, right? Is to make sure everybody is following along. Everybody gets where we're at. So let's pull this up. This is these are the Nixon tapes here. Okay. Let me pull the screen up here. All right. There's a couple of them. This is not all of them. Okay, let's play this here.
Cold started. He had his office call all of your labor statistics. I was in the time report, and that time report, I did tariff, and they all said it was gold sign. Gold sign. Yeah. But did he tell you? I said, who were they? I said, what kind of people were they? I said, were they all Jews? He said, yes. Malik is not Jewish. No. All right. I want to look at any sensitive areas around where Jews are involved, Bob. See, the Jews are all through the government. And we have got to get in those areas, we've got to get a man in charge who is not Jewish to control the Jewish. You understand?
I sure
do. The government's full of Jews.
I sure do.
Second, most Jews are disloyal. You know what I mean? You have a government and a Kissinger. And frankly, a satire. And I've got their exceptions. But Bob, generally speaking, you can't trust the bastards. They turn on you. Are you correct? Am I wrong or right?
And their whole orientation is against this administration anyway. Or against
so they have this arrogant attitude too.
Sure.
So?
And they're smart. They have the ability to do what they want to do, which is to hurt us. Which is the problem. They have the ability. Some people that are out
there. I don't even know how many Jews he's only got. And he got this one. Horrible bastard.
His aides, none of his aides have ever been to him. Even Tony Lake, who turned him, is.
That's right.
That is the guys, the young guys that he's always had.
But I agree with that among the Jews, Chairman. Now, I particularly attack the Jews throughout the administration. He's got a Jewish set in any place. And they're all over him. Let's see what we can do about it.
So for those who might have had a hard time, if you are listening audibly, it's a little bit scratchy. There's good subtitles to help. He's speaking about getting rid of the Jewish control of the government, right? Kind of weeding that out, looking at it as a very corrupt force and recognizing it as such. True Goy says, unless he was playing 4D chess, he was definitely wrong about Kissinger. Yeah, absolutely. He was just wrong about Kissinger. There's no 4D chess there. These tapes were entirely private. No one knew these tapes were being recorded at this time other than Nixon. So very private tapes. He genuinely thought this way, which is an unfortunate thing. He should have distrusted all Jews. Unfortunately, he allowed one under his wing. And then, well, we look at it now, look what Kissinger ended up doing, right? He took this Klaus Schwab fellow under his wing, helped to found this whole WEF nonsense, and now we're in the spot that we're in today with that. Okay, so that's Richard Nixon. That's him talking about the Jews. Now, why? Why does this matter? Why is this important? Why are we discussing this today, right? And he obviously didn't do anything about it. Nothing got fixed. Well, the reason we're discussing this is because you'll see the Jewish influence in the takedown of both Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew. This is something that is very rarely talked about, but it's very important that people understand this, okay? Richard Nixon was never proven guilty in a court of law for Watergate, okay? Never at all. He was originally, when this Watergate story came out, this was done by a Jew by the name of Carl Bernstein. We'll go over that ourselves in a little bit. The Nixon tapes were recorded by Nixon privately in his office. These were secret tapes that he was recording all of his encounters inside of the Oval Office, his private conversations. They were released after the Watergate investigation. My belief is that the Jews knew about this situation and how he wanted to get them out of control. And this is why they instigated Watergate against him. Anybody who looks, anytime there's talks about impeachment of a president, typically it is always a Jewish hand in that role in attempting to impeach somebody that is a threat to them, whether it's a direct threat or an indirect threat, that is typically the case. So before we go into Richard Nixon, I want to go into Spiro Agnew. One, if you guys are aware of the resignation of Spiro Agnew, two, if you are not. One, if you are, two, if you are not. Okay, good. A lot of twos. A lot of twos. That's a good thing. Means we can talk about this for the first time for some people. Okay, so Spiro Agnew, before Richard Nixon was taken out of office with Watergate, Spiro Agnew was forced to resign. Okay, he was pressured into resigning. Now, Spiro Agnew actually wrote a book about this, something that very few people know about. And in his book, he blames the Zionist lobby and the Zionist influence over our media and government for being the force that pressured him into this resignation, essentially via blackmail, okay? Now, we're going to watch this clip here. This is a clip of Rachel Maddow covering a letter that Spiro Agnew actually wrote to Saudi Arabia, okay? Now, very important to understand this in the correct framework. Rachel Maddow is Jewish, okay? So now when she's explaining this situation, you're getting yet again a Jewish take. And what the Jewish take will always be is anything that's against them, they take a public self-defense statement and make it seem like they're fighting patriotically against that force. So they will cover this. You'll hear her kind of cover this like, oh, he's alt-right and evil and getting in the range of equating him to being a Nazi because, again, she is a Jew. So this is what they always do. Okay, so we're going to play this now. And this is very important that you know this piece as well. And you'll hear her vitriolic hatred for this man. And Spiro Agnew did absolutely nothing wrong. He was being pressured over nonsense. They were trying to pull some bullshit about taxes, and they were putting a lot of pressure on him to try to get him to resign, which ended up happening, and that set the precedent for them to then do Watergate to Richard Nixon, because they didn't want to just do Watergate, and then it's like, oh, okay, well, now Richard Nixon's out, well, then Spiro Agnew would take over, and Spiro Agnew knew what was going on as well, so they would still have the same problem, so they had to knock out two birds with one stone, although they didn't use one stone, they used two. We're going to see how they did this to him first.
Terms in a row. Poppy Bush was also a little hamstrung by his choice of a running mate. He had picked a man named Dan Quayle, who was a fairly well-respected, handsome, reached out to an old friend. for help in trying to figure out how to come back and win that election. That debate in Los Angeles was held on October 13th, 1988.
The Awakening Brother, welcome. Welcome. It's a good chat the other night. What you're hearing here is she's talking about George Bush, and she's going to explain how George Bush was actually asking Spiro Agnew for advice.
2 days before the debate on October 11th, Vice President George H.W. Bush wrote this note. Check it out. Ted, as I head for the coast, I want you to know I got your last two.
He's not writing to Spiro. He's writing to Ted. Hold on. Let me go a little bit further ahead. Sorry about that.
Released our little podcast series, Bagman, about the amazing and mostly forgotten scandal that led to the removal of Vice President Spiro Agnew from office.
There we go.
One of the things that's happened since we launched that podcast series and we got such a great response to it is that we have been able to get a hold of some new documents related to Spiro Agnew, documents that we didn't have before and that haven't been publicly seen before. And they turn out to be documents that shed some light on details of modern American history that really haven't been known before. Documents like these previously unknown personal correspondences between George H.W. Bush and Spiro Agnew during the summer and fall of the 1988 presidential campaign. Agnew was meeting with at least one advisor to then Vice President Bush. Agnew was offering hints on handling the Dan Quayle attacks. I mean, again, Spiro Agnew at this point was a convicted felon. He was the first vice president to resign his office in disgrace. Everybody else in public life would run a mile to keep their distance from Spiro Agnew. But look.
And again, what you have to understand is they pulled the tax crime on Spiro Agnew, right? They can do this to anybody. It's really easy to do. There's all kinds of legal loopholes where you can get people on taxes, right? So this is what they did to him to try to smear his image to the public eye to make it reasonable for them to pressure him out of office.
Look at this one. Here was George H.W. Bush, sitting vice president and presidential candidate, during that presidential campaign, writing to convicted felon Spiro Agnew, quote, "I'd love to have a paper from you with any suggestions you'd care to make. I'd welcome such a paper. I really would." This was him asking for written advice from Agnew on how Bush could best plan his campaign to beat Dukakis. And it's not like George Bush was naive.
So again, she acts like this is some kind of a conspiracy for one guy to ask an ex-politician. Who cares? Let's say he was an actual awful felon. He wasn't murdering people. He was caught up on taxes, right? What's wrong with this guy asking an ex-vice president for advice on how to win a campaign? What's wrong with that, right? You see how they'll word things in a manner that you're supposed to insinuates that this is some kind of conspiratorial, awful behavior, right? Like the alt-right is clicking together to take out our nation and turn it into a tyranny, right? You see how they do this? She's using her language in a way that insinuates that this is some kind of evil and conspiratorial thing that's going on. It's simply a guy running for office asking an ex-vice president for advice on how to run his campaign. There's nothing wrong with that at all. There's nothing conspiratorial or evil about that.
Naive or ignorant about Spiro Agnew's past, as we found in Bagman, Poppy Bush, who was the Republican Party chairman at the time of the Agnew scandal, he was brought into what looks very much like a criminal obstruction of justice scheme orchestrated by the Nixon White House to try to pressure the federal prosecutors who were working on the Agnew case that they should drop the case. I mean, George H.W. Bush was personally in on that. He was part of that scheme. He knew exactly what had gone down with Agnew. But thanks to these documents that we have now obtained, we can now see that Bush kept up this effusive, secret back-channel communication with Agnew for years after that, including right through his own 1988 presidential campaign. So that Bush-Agnew...
So again, one man running for president writing a letter to an ex-vice president for advice on how to run his campaign is not a conspiratorial or backroom secret discussion, okay? He's asking for political advice. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Not that I like George Bush in any stretch at all, but there's nothing wrong with that action. This is just to insinuate that there is something awful, going on. That this is what they do.
Correspondence, I think, is basically a new piece of presidential and presidential campaign history, which is worth knowing about Poppy Bush and the 1988 campaign. worth knowing about Agnew, especially in light of Agnew's disgrace and the way he was removed from office?
This was before Love of Our People. This video is from 2021, I believe.
But I tell you that in part to lay the groundwork for some of the other stuff that we have obtained. In the course of the Bagman research and thereafter, we have also obtained some other materials that don't just give us an interesting new footnote in presidential history. These are materials that I think are just simply pretty explosive. So let me just show you what we got. What you are looking at here is a telegram, a telex, that was sent in 1980. And as you can see at the bottom of the telex, it's a telegram that was sent by Spiro T. Agnew, former Vice President of the United States. And in terms of the timeline here, you'll recall Agnew resigned the vice presidency in 1973. So this is a telegram he was sending 7 years later in 1980 when he was a private citizen. And he sent this message to, as you can see, His Excellency, Ahmad Abdul Wahab, Chief of Royal Protocol, Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. What Spiro Agnew was asking for in this telegram he wrote to the Saudi kingdom was something very specific. He wanted an audience with the Saudi crown prince at the time. Agnew wrote, quote, "It would be deeply appreciated if your excellency could arrange for me to have an audience with His Royal Highness Prince Fahd as soon as possible. The matter to be discussed involves a personal emergency that is of critical importance to me." So this is former Vice President Spiro Agnew writing to the Chief of Protocol of the Saudi royal family in 1980, saying, "I need to meet with the Crown Prince on something that is of critical importance, a personal emergency." Agnew says in this telex, quote, "In the past, His Royal Highness has assured me that he would be available should I need to see him." So this is a former vice president basically calling in a chit of some kind. He once told me I could call on him if I ever needed help. Well, now I need help. What Agnew gets back in response to this telegram is this. "To His Excellency Spiro Agnew, re your telex in which you have expressed your wish to have an audience with His Royal Highness Prince Fahd. Stop. We can arrange for you to have an audience with His Royal Highness on August 15th. Regards." So then we get Agnew's response back to that. Telex back to the Saudi protocol chief, quote, "I am very pleased to accept your kind offer to arrange an audience with His Royal Highness Prince Fahd on August 15th. So this is Agnew saying, okay, I'll be there. Quote, "Please advise time and location when available." So America's relationship with Saudi Arabia is complicated even in the best of times, right? I mean, think about what we're in right now. I mean, as we speak, the U.S.-Saudi relationship right now revolves around, among other things, a suspected illicit relationship between the Saudi royal family and the National Enquirer, which is headed up by the president's longtime friend, David Pecker. Questions about whether the National Enquirer might have been acting as an agent of the Saudi government when that publication went on the warpath against Amazon CEO and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos recently. The Post has been critical of the Saudi government recently over the murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside a Saudi consulate. Jeff Bezos has suggested that the Saudis may have retaliated against him for that coverage with an extortion and blackmail effort run out of the National Enquirer. All this happening while the Trump administration continues to resist blaming the Saudi government for the murder at all. Just this week, it was announced that the Trump administration is also now being investigated by the Oversight Committee in Congress over a secret plan to transfer highly sensitive nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia against the warnings of top national security officials and potentially against the law. This nuclear thing was a plan that several people associated with the president appear to have had a significant personal financial stake in.
Okay, so yet again, you see it's a constant smear. All right, now here's what she is building up to. She's now going to pull out her final smear, and this is going to now put into your eyes exactly what the situation is here and why it is so necessary she smears this man.
So the relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia has been complicated for a long time. It is still messy as all get out right now. But what we now know from these documents we've obtained is that the modern history of Saudi Arabia and presidencies in trouble might be even more complicated than we previously understood, because what disgraced Vice President Spiro Agnew wanted from that desperate plea he was making to meet with the Saudi crown prince that summer of 1980. What this disgrace...
Look at her very carefully. Okay, she's trying very hard to grab your attention. This is so serious. You have to focus. You see how she's really trying to... This is a bombshell, guys. This is so big, right? Watch very closely. What's so important? What's so awful that this man was trying to do?
Raced former U.S. Vice President was approaching Saudi Arabia about and asking for? It's sort of breathtaking, but we're going to show you. Spiro Agnew was writing to the Saudi royal family to solicit their help, their financial support, for him to lead a scorched earth propaganda campaign in the United States to expose the Jews, to wage a political war on Jews in America. No, really. The reason that Spiro Agnew sent that telegram asking for a meeting with the Saudi crown prince is made clear in this draft of a letter that Agnew wrote to the crown prince just a few weeks later. It's dated August 25th, 1980. Your Highness, at the request of Sheikh Ahmed, the protocol chief, I am writing this letter to explain the principal reasons for my urgent request to see you. Your Highness is already familiar with the unremitting Zionist efforts to destroy me. During the time I was under attack from former Attorney General Elliot Richardson in 1973, the reason for their need to drive me out was stated by Richardson several times. He said that I could not be trusted to act properly in the Middle East. Therefore, I was framed and driven from office.
Now, I want to tell you something, okay? I could not be trusted to act properly in the Middle East. You know what that means? We don't think this goy is going to support Israel. That's what that means, okay? It doesn't mean, oh, he's a loose cannon and something might go wrong. It means we don't think we can trust him to support our Israel, so therefore, we need to get this guy out of office, okay? So, also, want to clarify something. She says, oh, he's putting out a campaign to attack the Jews, right? To expose the Jews. He's clearly only talking about Zionists here. He never once actually says the word Jews. And this is where we get this problem of using the term Zionist today. What people don't realize is Jews don't give a fuck if they're Zionists or not. Okay, it's Jews. Okay, it's Jews. Even Rachel Maddow, the Jew, is accurately looking at this document that states he's looking after Zionists, and she's conflating this into he's attacking the Jews. They will always do this, so you might as well just go after the source rather than play this Zionism game, okay?
Reason was that the Zionists in the United States knew that I would never agree to the continuance of the unfair and disastrous favoring of Israel, and they had to get me out of there so I would not succeed Nixon.
Do you see that? Okay. I'm going to read this again. It's very important you know this. They said that he was not trusted with his Middle East policy, so they had to put a campaign out against him. Listen to this one. Therefore, I was framed, okay, and driven from office. The reason was that Zionists in the United States knew that I would never agree to the continuance of the unfair and disastrous favoring of Israel, and they had to get me out of there so that I would not succeed Nixon. This is Spiro Agnew, the Vice President of the United States of America, openly stating that he was pressured out of his office, his place of office, by Zionists, okay, aka by Jews, all right, because they felt he was not going to support Israel properly, okay? Which, we just watched the Nixon tapes, we heard that Nixon also wanted to put a little bit of pressure on the Jews that were in government because of what the corrupt things that they were trying to do. Now that we know that they pressured him as well, in just a minute, we're going to go into who pressured him and why they pressured him.
Since 1974, the Zionists have orchestrated a well-organized attack on me, the idea being to use lawsuits to bleed me of my resources, to continue my effort to inform the American people of their control of the media and other influential sectors of American society.
Sound like anything we know? Echoes what we've heard from everybody else that you're told is conspiracy. It's factual information. It's all there, right? And this Jew has to cover it in this way. This is damage control. This is self-defense. This is this gaslighting situation, right? It's, whoa, look at a crazy little whack job over there, right? Just like they did to Kanye. It's the exact same situation. They go, oh, he's off his rocker. Do you hear this guy talking about the Jews? DEFCON 3, what does he mean, right? Now it's, You see this Spiro Agnew guy? Conspiracy against our own government. Look at this lunatic trying to work with the dirty Muslims. You see how they do this constantly? Okay? It's this, this is their self-defense tactic, is character smearing. Making, they jump in front of the story as quickly as they can, so when it gets out there, they can frame it in, well, we already talked about this. That guy's a fucking lunatic. Why are we even discussing this again, Goy? Get off of this topic, Goyim. What do we care about this? We talked about this already. He's insane. Okay, that's what they do. All right, let's finish this up.
I'm sure that one of the lawsuits Agnew was then dealing with was encouraged by the B'nai B'rith.
Now, folks, who knows what the B'nai B'rith is? Anybody know? Anybody know? Can anybody in the chat tell me what the B'nai B'rith is? Ah, yes. Very good. Maybe next time. The ADL. You see how this works? This is it's that's what the ADL was founded through, right? So now we have this organization, the Anti-Defamation League, who we openly know today is all they do is defame good people, okay, and claim that they're anti-Semitic and smear their character and get them canceled and get all of their advertiser revenue cut down. So they did this to Spiro Agnew, and now he's like, dude, okay, so I live in America. I've been smeared by the Zionist government. They have, quote-unquote, debanked me, essentially, right? Just like they did to Kanye, again, using the same expression here, okay? So now I'm in this situation. Now, you're Spiro Agnew, right? You've been debanked. You've been deplatformed. You've literally been forced out of vice presidency by this group of people, okay, who have smeared your image in the media and made you look like a lunatic. And a felon. Now, obviously, no one in America is going to want to help you, because if they help you and it comes out that they helped you, now the Jews are going to do the same to them. And they don't want that to happen to them. So what are you going to do? You're going to reach overseas and you're going to try to ask somebody else who knows about this Jewish problem and try to ask them for help, which is exactly what he's doing here. There's nothing conspiratorial about this. This is his only action to take. He's been pushed against the wall by the Jew. And then the Jew now goes even further and publicly shames him for using his only means of action and trying to make him look even worse than they did before. This is their tactics. These people are devious.
In conjunction with the publication of my book, I've taken every opportunity to speak out against the catastrophic U.S. policies regarding Israel. This has spurred my Zionist enemies on to greater efforts. I need desperately your financial support so that I can continue to fight. Former Vice President then asks the Saudi Crown Prince to put $2 million in a secret Swiss bank account for him, from which Agnew would live off the interest, and it would all be untraceable to Saudi Arabia. Quote, if your highness is willing to help me, but this method is not suitable, I would be grateful for any other idea that would give me about $200,000 a year for the next 3 years. I do so want to continue my fight against the Zionist enemies who are destroying my once great nation.
That's a commendable man right there, okay? That is a commendable man. It's a shame that the narrative was not as good as it is today, or maybe he would have been able to make some footwork, okay? All right, so now we know Spiro Agnew was pressured out of office by Zionists because, well, he was trying to get rid of the Zionist control, and he was not accepting policies that were overly favorable to Israel and not our own nation, right? Which is, again, what any normal American person would do. So, one in the chat, if you guys know who is the person that came out with the Watergate story to expose Richard Nixon. One, if you know who that is. Two, if you do not. One, if you're familiar with who did that. Two, if you are not. A lot of twos. Well, I'm sure you could take a guess. We'll pull it up here. Okay. So there was a man by the name of that went under the alias of Deep Throat who brought the story to the media. But what's important is who published the story, okay? Who put the story out there, okay? It was none other than a man by the name of Carl Bernstein, okay? Carl Bernstein. Now, as usual, if we look at Carl Bernstein's history as a journalist, you can see he was born to a secular Jewish family, okay? And both of his parents were civil rights activists and members of the Communist Party of the United States of America in the 1940s, okay? So we have a quite literal communist Jew, and don't forget, communists want to openly overthrow the government, okay? We have a communist Jew putting out a hit piece on Richard Nixon, okay? Now, again, what's very important to know is Richard Nixon was never proven guilty in a court of law, okay? Never proven guilty. He resigned. He was not impeached, okay? And he resigned from pressure. There's a lot of pressure being put on him. Same amount of pressure that was being put on Spiro Agnew, okay? Now, we know the media made this whole, you know, thing true. Again, all you have to do is put it into the masses' minds hard enough and it becomes truth, right? There was no real factual evidence of these things. Now, we have yet again, the motive is quite in the open, right? The motive for them to try to go after him was so that they could stop him from taking out this Zionist control of our government, okay? Now, here's the thing. Communist Jews are left-wing, right? And Zionist Jews are right-wing. So why would communist Jews have a problem with him trying to take out right-wing Jews? Why would a left-wing Jew care and want to put out a hit piece against Nixon who wants to take out right-wing Jews? Because it's all a facade, okay? There is no communist Jew and Zionist Jew. Communism and Zionism are political manifestations of Jewish thought pattern, okay? There is no right-wing Jew, left-wing Jew, okay? As Adolf Hitler says, they play this Jew of the people, okay? It's not a thing. It doesn't exist, okay? It's a facade. They're putting it up, all right? Now, going to go a little bit deeper here. Now, Watergate, probably much less people know this than the Watergate situation. Watergate was Plan B, okay? Watergate was Plan B because Plan A did not work. One in the chat, if you knew that there was an assassination attempt on Richard Nixon, two if you did not, one if you knew that somebody, there's your hint, tried to assassinate Richard Nixon, two if you didn't know that, two if you had no idea at all. Wow, an astounding number of twos. Well, this is great. This is a bombshell then, right? It's true journalism here, real journalism, okay? Richard Nixon, a man tried to assassinate him by the name of Samuel Bick, okay? Samuel Bick was, they inaccurately describe him as a American hijacker and attempted assassin. Okay, on February 22nd, 1974, he attempted to hijack a plane flying out of Baltimore Washington International Airport, intending to crash into the White House in hopes of killing President Richard Nixon. Okay, he killed a cop and a pilot, and then he was apprehended. Okay, and well, he was killed in return. Born to always poor Jewish parents in South Philadelphia. Okay, so a Jewish man. Okay, a Jewish man tried yet again to assassinate a president, much like the Jew who literally physically assassinated Huey Long, okay? You see this time and time again, Jews assassinating people, right? Quite often, okay? Now, to go further, something really interesting that you want to know about this as well, that's very important. Bic sent tape recordings to various Jewish public figures, including Yonas Salk, Senator Abraham Ribicoff, and composer Leonard Bernstein. Okay? He sent them tapes explaining things that he wanted to do. Okay? And, get this one, he tried to join the Black Panthers. Now, if you guys know, we've done this quite a few times. We've covered the Black Panthers and the Weather Underground organization. Both of these organizations were predominantly Jewish creations, and then they put Black people on board to help push their what we call communist aims. But this is the problem that our government had, right? For years, they were investigating these organizations as communist organizations. That was where our government went wrong. They should have been investigating them as Jewish organizations, and the problem would have been fixed, because they would have been getting it at the source, right? This is why Hitler was able to succeed, because he was able to accurately point out who was doing communism. It wasn't just like, oh, there happens to be like three or four Jews. No, it is Jews. Jews bring it everywhere, okay? Anywhere you look, there's Jews. Jews, okay? They're everywhere. Yeah, let's go into a couple of the Jews that he was sending these tapes to, okay? Jonas Salk, okay, is the Jewish man who invented the first successful polio vaccine. Okay? So we know today what vaccines do to people. Okay? Talk about the whole virology theory being Jewish and false. Okay? Scroll down here just a little bit. Okay, yet again, born in New York City. His parents were Jewish. All right. Are we catching a pattern? Is anybody catching a pattern here at all? Are we seeing this? Okay. He also sent letters or tapes to Abraham Alexander Ribicoff, okay, who was an Ashkenazi Jew. All right. He was in the House of Representatives, which, again, is one of our biggest problems. Okay, he was a left-wing Jew, as usual. Now, I don't know how these people viewed these tapes. There's not much information on that. Okay. And then he also sent it to Leonard Bernstein. Okay. Who is yet another Jew. Here we go again. Bernstein worked in support of civil rights, protected against the Vietnam War, advocated nuclear disarmament, raised money for HIV and AIDS. You see how they're always like the greatest people ever. He conducted a resurrection ceremony to mark the death of President JFK, and in Israel at a concert, Hatkava on Mount Scopus after the Six-Day War. It's coincidentally 6 days. Okay, Russian Jewish. You get the pattern. The pattern is always the same. We got left-wing Jews coming from Russia, coming from the East, and bringing their filth here. All right. Okay. So, yeah. Bic tried to assassinate Nixon. All right. He stole a firearm. He hijacked a plane. A whole nine yards. I'm not going to go too deep into this. You guys can look into this on your own end. But it's very important that, yet again, you understand this, right? Also, one other little thing. Because of his acts, he helped to pull in some of the, restrictions that we now have at airports. Okay, post 9/11. One other thing I want to point out. We talked about Rabbi Shmuley on, it was either the last podcast show or the one prior to that. And we talked about how Jews made the money war dogs to profit off of a situation where a Jew was actually doing something illegal internationally. So now we've got Samuel Bic, who's a Jew who tried to assassinate a president, right? And we have two Jews who wrote a musical about it called Assassins. Okay? This was written by Stephen Sondheim, okay, who yet again was born to a Jewish family in New York City. Okay, you get the same thing every single time. So he is pushing in this film or into the media, and these musicals and these books. They push it into the media, and they now make money off of a terror attack that they tried to commit on your country. They now make money off of it. Okay. Now this is very interesting. I'm going to go into this a little bit as well. this Jew who we're just talking about had a friendship with Oscar Hammerstein. Okay, we've talked about Oscar Hammerstein before. In Bucks County, okay, which is basically 15 minutes outside of where I live, there's a museum. There's a museum that Oscar Hammerstein's old house was turned into. I've been there, okay? Loaded with Jewish propaganda everywhere, okay? There was a woman by the name of Pearl Buck that they indoctrinated to become a puppet of the Jews and a civil rights warrior, who wrote all kinds of books about multiculturalism back in like the 80s and 60s, talking about, Asian. She adopted like 4 or 8 Asian children, was taking care of Asian and black children, very, very Jewish, the whole circumstance. And they pushed this into her mindset. She unfortunately was not a Jew. She was a goy who was duped into this. That's everything we'll cover on the Richard Nixon end of things. I just thought those were some very important little pieces that people have to know. There was yet again another presidential assassination attempt on Richard Nixon. Okay, and as usual, the assassins just happened to be left-wing Jews who were active in Marxist and communist organizations. Okay. Okay, we are coming up on the 1 hour mark of the show. We're going to take a brief little intermission. I have to say, I appreciate, by the way, the viewership today. Odyssey, we've got quite a bit of people in there. We're going to throw on some classical music. We're at the 1 hour mark. We're going to take about a 5 minute break. I'm going to fill up my tea, and we'll be right back with some more discussion. Don't forget, while we are on this break, if you guys do want to support this show, keep this show running. If you find this information informative and helpful to your own worldview, want to help me to be able to do this more often, you guys can do so by supporting down in the description below. We've got Entropy for the Super Chats. You can support straight through Odyssey, and then we also have the crypto wallets. Only one request is, if you do support through the crypto wallets to invest in my work, please send me a private message and let me know that you did so, so I'm aware who sent it, and I can appropriately thank you for doing such. Okay, we're going to take a brief little intermission. We'll be back in about 5 minutes, guys, okay? Thank you so much for staying with me. Thank you. Alrighty, folks, we are back, coming into the second hour of the Speak Free radio show. Hope you guys are enjoying the show so far. We're going to go over something a little bit different after we get settled in here again. I just want to touch base yet again for all those listening on Speak Free Radio and anywhere else. If you guys want to get connected with me on all of my socials, make sure you follow me on Gab at Logos Revealed, and make sure you follow me on Twitter at Logos Revealed with an I at the end of it. It's where you can find a lot. I'm posting a lot of clips. Long form content is now being put up there as well. And in that way, you guys can spread the message in the normie sphere in a very easy manner. All you have to do is hit that repost button or quote it and put your own thoughts ahead of it or above it. White Dog's House, I don't see you in the chat live very often, but thank you so much. I don't get to ever formally thank you for your support towards the stream. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much for the very kind investments that you have made. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. We talked about Nixon in the first half, and we went into the Jewish involvement in the taking out of both him and his vice president, which is a very unfortunate situation, but not anything uncommon, at least. Now, I would actually like to refer to a Hitler speech. This is from 1923. This is far before Hitler was in power. This is about a decade beforehand. And this speech is something that is very eye-opening. It's going to teach you a little bit about how accurately this man saw the situation and why he was so able to do the things he did, right? So, you know, in order to instill something really good into society, you obviously have to have a good knowledge of what's going on, right? And this isn't just societal. This is anywhere you look. If you want to do something right, you have to be informed, right? So quite clearly, if we look at history, Hitler did some very good things. Therefore, he must have been well-informed to some degree, right? So we're going to go into this speech and show how well-informed this man was all the way back in 1923. Okay. This is his speech of April 13th, again, the year 1923. We're going to read this and analyze it as we read. Okay. Phoenix, I don't know what language that is. Yes, they certainly went after Nixon because they knew he was trying to take them out of power in the United States. They always go after their enemies, nothing else. Okay, this is, again, a April 13th speech. He states, "In our view, the times when there was no League of Nations, which today is the United Nations in the modern scope, were far more honorable and more humane. We ask, must there be wars? The pacifist answers, no. He proceeds to explain that disputes in the life of peoples are only the expression of the fact that a class has been oppressed by the ruling bourgeoisie. When there are in fact differences of opinion between peoples, then these should be brought before a peace court for its decision. But he does not answer the question whether the judges of this court or arbitration would have the power to bring the parties before the bar of the court. I believe that an accused ordinarily only appears voluntarily before a court, because if he did not, he would be fetched there." Okay, so he's saying the only reason that people even participate in this international United Nations kind of a court, this idea of international law, the only reason people actually follow this is because they feel an obligation to. They feel that if they didn't follow it voluntarily, there would be pressure put on them in order to force them to follow it. Basically exactly what happened to Germany, correct? When Germany came to power and decided, no, we're going to put our own will into place, they actually did follow UN's international law probably better actually than any other country did in World War II. But you see, because the international community did not like Germany, specifically because the international community is a Jewish one, on when Nuremberg came, they hung them all, right? They put them in front of that international court and wrongly hung many men, brutally, okay? Which again, I believe, I could be incorrect, fell in the timeline of Purim as well, which is a pattern we see, right? It's a pattern we see. Okay. He states, I should like to see the nation which would allow itself to be brought before this League of Nations court in the case of a disagreement without external force. In the life of nations, what in the last resort decides questions is a kind of judgment court of God. It may even happen that in case of a dispute between two peoples, both may be in the right. Thus Austria, a people of 50 millions, had most certainly the right to an outlet to the sea. But since in the strip of territory in question, the Italian element of the population was in the majority, Italy claimed for herself the right to self-determination. Who yields voluntarily? No one. So the strength which each people possesses decides the day. Always, before God and the world, the stronger has the right to carry through what he wills. Okay? This is an indisputable fact, right? In nature, do the majority of zebras, do 80 zebras decide what the two tigers do, or the two lions, rather? Do 80 zebras dictate how two lions should live their lives? No, when those two lions come around, the zebras recognize them as stronger, and they run right away. There's no question about it. Okay, the zebras don't say, down with the oppressive lions. We must stop these oppressive lions. They don't do that, right? They recognize this is a stronger animal. It's far more capable of imposing its will. I'm going to bend to that will and secede. Okay, this is nature. This is all of nature. You see this in childhood disputes, right? The stronger. Back in the early days in America, we actually supported this, right? We said, let them duke it out, right? That used to be the mindset. Oh, two guys are having a dispute. Let them duke it out, right? Nowadays, it's, oh, don't hurt each other. Don't hurt each other. Oh, God, right? But let them fight it out, right? Allow the stronger to impose his will on the weaker, okay? Might is right in nature. That is the way things are. That is natural order. History proves, he who has not the strength, him, the right in itself, profits not a whit. A world court without a world police would be a joke. And from what nations of the present League of Nations would then this force be recruited? Perhaps from the ranks of the old German army? The whole world of nature is a mighty struggle between strength and weakness, an eternal victory of the strong over the weak. There would be nothing but decay in the whole world of nature if this were not so. States which should offend against the elementary law would fall into decay. You need not seek for long to find an example of such mortal decay. You can see it in the Reich of today. Now, take the Reich, take Germany out of this situation. Think about our present day, our modern time, what we're going through. Is this not present today? We're allowing the weak, the faggots, the trannies, the emotional baggage, deluded children of society today dictate how the strong man acts in society. The strong man with conviction is now browbeat by the weak, the effeminate, the homosexual. Okay? That is who is dictating the will of the strong. This is backwards. This is against natural order, and this cannot stand for long. We will either go extinct living like this, or we will impose the stronger will and fix the problem. You have two choices. There are no other choices. This is natural order. This is how things go. Okay. Before the war, two states, Germany and France, had to live side by side, but only under arms. It is true that the war of 1870 to 71 meant for Germany the close of an enmity, which had endured for centuries. But in France, a passionate hatred against Germany was fostered by every means, by propaganda in the press, in school textbooks, in theaters, in the cinemas. Now, before we go further, is that not today, folks? Do we not get that same propaganda about Germany today? Right? About the evil, awful Nazis? It's in the books. It's on the social media. For Christ's sake, it's at your literal presidential campaigns. They have to reference the Jewish plight. Oh, gosh. What the Nazis did. Right? Now, remember, folks, if this wasn't just propaganda, if this was true, right, if this was this awful thing that these Jews felt so awful about, that the Nazis did this, and that this whole never again thing was a thing, okay, if this was true, and these people really deeply cared and were fearful the way they claimed to be, and this isn't just this browbeating tactic, do you not think that a fearful victim, when saved from their plight, would say thank you? Do you not think that? Let me run you a scenario. Let us say a woman is being sexually assaulted, and a man hops in and beats the shit out of the punk that's doing this to her, okay? And pulls her away, and now it goes into the news, and she decides to make a public statement, okay? And John just saved her life. He just beat the shit out of this this creep that was trying to molest her, okay? Now, when she goes on this stage, being a victim to this creep, when she talks negatively about this creep and says, never again, we can't let this let men like this roam the streets, he must go to jail, never again. Do you think when she recognizes John, the man who saved her, do you think she would say, thank you very much, John, for what you've done, for saving me? Or do you think she would have said, John, you didn't do enough. This can't ever happen again, John. You let this happen. You didn't do enough for me, right? This is what the Jew is doing today, okay? Oh, America, you guys could have done more to stop this. America, you guys were just as fascist. You are just as fascist. You have fascist sympathizers. Look at Donald Trump. All they do is point the finger at you. They never have once said, thank you for saving us from that awful Holocaust. Thank you so much for saving us from those awful Germans. Not one time have you heard it. Okay, Jonathan Greenblatt has no problem writing books, never again, going on speeches, never again, riling up the media, never again. Never once does he say, thank you for saving us from that situation. We greatly appreciate you for that. Not once. Okay, it shows you, it's propaganda. Okay, they don't give a shit. This isn't true worry or victimhood. Okay. We'll continue. He states, all the Jewish papers throughout France agitated against Berlin. Here again to seek and to exploit grounds for a conflict is the clearly recognizable effort of world Jewry. Again, we see the same thing today, right? What's the effort of Jews taking a foothold in an organization like BLM? Right? Why are Jews footholding an organization like BLM? Well, there can only be one conclusion. They want to create conflict in the state, right? They used to pull up the proletariat against the bourgeoisie. Well, now that's a little bit harder to do in a capitalist society where the classes fluctuate. So now we'll just put the races against each other, right? We'll turn black against white. Black is the lower class in this society, so let's turn them against the higher. That's how we destroy the power structure. That's why they created BLM. That's why they're funding BLM. Okay, it's also why they created organizations like the Weather Underground. And why they funded organizations like the Black Panthers. Let's go further. The conflict of interest between Germany and England lay in the economic sphere. Up until 1850, England's position as a world power was undisputed. British engineers, British trade, conquered the world. Germany, owing to greater industry and increased capacity, begins to be a dangerous rival. In a short time, those firms, which in Germany were in English hands, pass into the possession of German industrialists. German industry expands vastly, and the products of the industry, even in the London market, drive out British goods. The protective measure, the stamp made in Germany, has the opposite effect from that desired. This protective stamp becomes a highly effective advertisement. The German economic success was not created in Essen alone, but by a man who knew that behind economics must stand power. For power alone makes an economic position secure. This power was born upon the battlefields of 1870 and 71, not in the atmosphere of parliamentary chatter. 40,000 dead have rendered possible the life of 40 millions. When England, in the face of such a Germany as this, threatened to be brought to her knees, then she bethought herself of the last weapon in the armory of international rivalry: violence. A press propaganda on an imposing scale was started as a preparatory measure. But who is the chief of the whole British press concerned with world trade? One name crystallizes itself out of the rest: Northcliffe, a Jew. A campaign of provocation is carried on with assertions, libels, and promises such as only a Jew can devise, such as only Jewish newspapers would have the effrontery to put before an Aryan people. And then at last, 1914, they egg the people on. Ah, poor violated Belgium, up to the rescue of the small nations, for the honor of humanity. The same lies, the same provocation throughout the entire world. And the success of that provocation, the German people can trace grievously enough. Okay, we're experiencing this exact same scenario today, right? Poor Ukraine! Poor Ukraine, they're being bullied by Russia. Putin is Hitler. We have to save them in the name of democracy. Same propaganda, same lies. Nothing has changed. Now, the only problem I have here, this is actually the one time ever that I will point that I have found so far where I believe Hitler was actually incorrect. He stated Northcliffe was a Jew. As I cited before on my show, in the book The Controversy of Zion, Douglas Reed, who was actually one of the last men to ever see Lord Northcliffe, Lord Northcliffe had informed him that he believed he was poisoned by the Jews and that the Jews were out to get him because he had posted the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion in the London Weekly. So I don't think Hitler's right about Northcliffe being a Jew. I could be incorrect, but I don't think so. Further, what cause finally had America to enter the war against Germany? With the outbreak of the World War, which Judah had desired so passionately and so long, all the large, Jewish firms of the United States began supplying ammunition. They supplied the European war market to an extent which perhaps even they themselves had never dreamed of, a gigantic harvest. Yet nothing satisfied the insatiable greed of the Jew. And so the venal press, which depended upon the stock exchange kings, began an unparalleled propaganda campaign. Now again, you have to remember, this is before World War II. It's almost like he's talking about what happened in World War II. It's insane how accurate it is, because their tactics do not change. The Jewish tactics cannot change. Once you understand Jewish tactics, you understand how to fix the problem, because they don't fluctuate, they don't change. It's the same thing every time. A gigantic organization for newspaper lying was built up. Once more, it is a Jewish concern, the Hearst Press, which set the tone of the agitation against Germany. Again, they did this exact same thing in World War II, right? Calling the Germans evil Nazis, warmongers, they want world domination, all lies, all falsehoods, to make Germans look bad, right? And even worse so, they themselves advocated genocide far before the claim even was put that Germany advocated it, which they never did. This was done by Theodor Kaufmann in his book, Germany Must Perish, okay, which was propped up by the New York Times, the Jewish press, propped this book up and called it a great idea. And in this book, the man states that they should vaccinate all Germans and sterilize them. Okay? Talk about evil eugenics, so to speak. Okay? And by the way, when Jews call eugenics evil, this is an oxymoron. Okay? Don't forget this, folks. Don't forget this. Think about this very closely, okay? When a Jew says eugenics are evil, okay, first off, evil eugenics is an oxymoron, because eugenics, by definition, if you look at the etymology of the word, means good creation, by definition, okay? So it's an oxymoron to use. But now, again, like we talk about in other situations, when we think, oh, that's a lie, the Jews are lying, Well, let's analyze. Let's look from the Jewish point of view. When a Jew says eugenics are evil, from a Jewish point of view, yes, they are, right? Because Jews are a dysgenic people. And if we have a eugenic society, we're going to break down their ability to subvert our society. So for them, it is evil. For us, it is not. Okay, so it's a lie in our eyes. It is a truth in theirs. Something that we have to pay close attention to with these Jews. A lot of times when they say these things, they're telling the truth, but it is a lie in our worldview. Okay? For example, Nazis or Trump or Putin are a threat to our democracy when they say this term. Well, out of a Jew's mouth, yes, absolutely. Right? Because Jewish democracy is something we want gone with. Everybody who has a brain wants gone with. Okay? But when they say it, it's truth. This is a truth, right? And when we look at it from our perspective and we say, Trump is a threat to our democracy, what the hell are you talking about, right? Or white supremacy is a threat to our democracy. What? White supremacy? What are you talking about? Whites created this democracy, which, by the way, we don't live in a democracy. It never was a democracy. It's not supposed to be a democracy. Jews need it to be a democracy. That's why they keep saying the word, okay? Drive like Jehu. What do you mean? I'm not familiar with this data leak. Can you elaborate a little bit? Let's go a little bit further here. Okay. Now again, we talk about the American. He's talking about the American press putting out propaganda against the Germans. Now listen to this one. The hatred of these, and he puts in quotations, Americans, meaning they're Jews. They're not really American at all. Was not directed solely against commercial Germany or against military Germany. It was directed specifically against social Germany, because this Germany had up to that time kept itself outside of the principles which governed the world trusts. The old Reich had at least made an honorable attempt to be socially minded. We had to show for ourselves such an initiative in social institutions as no other country in the world could boast. This explains why even in Germany itself, the comrades, meaning the communists, under Jewish leadership, fought against their own vital interests. This explains the agitation carried on throughout the world under the same watchword. Okay? We have this today. Right? We have this today. Yes, democracy is the predecessor to Marxism. Hitler says that as well in one of his speeches. Jews need democracy because democracy can easily be subverted into a Marxist society or a communistic society. Okay? Further, for this reason, the Jewish Democratic Press of America had to accomplish its masterpiece. That is to say, it had to drive into the most horrible of all wars a great peace-loving people, which was as little concerned in European struggles as it was in the North Pole. America was to intervene in defense of civilization. They've changed the word civilization to democracy today. And the Americans were persuaded to do so by an atrocity propaganda. Does this sound familiar? Conducted in the name of civilization, which from A to Z was a scandalous invention, the like of which has never yet been seen. A farrago of lies and forgeries. If only Hitler could have seen what they did after World War II. Because this last state in the world, where social aims were being realized, had to be destroyed, therefore 26 peoples were incited, one against the other, by this press, which is exclusively in the possession of one and the same world people, of one and the same race. And that race, on principle, is the deadly foe of all national states. Following? Holokov with 100 library coins. Thank you so much, brother. Can we get the Romans in the chat for Holokov, the first investment of the show? Thank you, my friend. August, Logos, are you pro-euthanasia? Like if a baby turned out to have a disability? Also, what about elderly that can't look after themselves? I am pro-euthanasia for a baby that has a disability. I am not pro-euthanasia for elderly that are no longer capable of looking out for themselves. If they provided for the community in their lifetime, there is no reason to euthanize somebody like that. That is a very immoral thing to do. It is moral to euthanize a baby with a disability. Now, again, it depends on what the disability is. Does he have a bum leg, you know, or does he have Down syndrome? There is a range here that has to be looked at. If the baby has Down syndrome, it is a moral thing to do. If the baby has a bum leg, it is not a moral thing to do. This is where we have to, you know, pull at strings a little bit, and there's situational circumstances with that. Okay, further. Oh, gosh, I'm getting a scratchy throat. Who could have prevented the World War? Not the, and I cannot say this, folks, Col Tursolidaritat. I'm going to spell that. K-U-L hyphen T-U-R S-O-L-I-D-A-R-I-T-A-T. The solidarity of civilization, in whose name the Jews carried on their propaganda, not the so-called world pacifism, again, an exclusively Jewish invention. Could the so-called solidarity of the proletariat, all the wheels stand silent. Still, if that be your strong arm's will, the German wheel on November 9th, 1918, was indeed brought to a standstill. The Social Democratic Party, in its principal organ, Vorwärts, and by organ he means newspaper, declared in so many words that it was not in the interest of the workers that Germany should win the war. So what he's saying is, in his own society, okay, in his own society, their press was putting out anti-German propaganda, just like in our society, our press is putting out anti-white propaganda. This is a Jewish creation. Old Andy, he says, I can't get behind the baby thing. We never know what kind of advancements may become available at any time. What do you mean by advancements? If you could clarify. Thank you. Foreplay Junkie, well said. Most people can't wrap their head around this. This is where they get caught up in a Christian worldview of good and bad, or more of a Jewish worldview of good and bad. We talked about this on a show not long ago, explaining this concept of beyond good and evil, right? A morality that is beyond this kind of black and white of good and evil. It's very important that we can look past this. Here's the thing. It's not. I don't think Down syndrome people can ever function appropriately in society. And additionally, the entire purpose of life is procreation. If we have a Down syndrome person who is going to be obviously hindered in life, we don't want somebody like that procreating. If they procreate, they're going to end up, they themselves are already a tax on society. Now they are going to create more children that are more likely to also be a tax on society. And then this continues down the line. Yeah, Downs is a spectrum. Autism is a spectrum as well. Well, this is the thing, though, old Andy. So I just want to touch on this a little bit. If we talk about medical advancements, well, this is the problem yet again. So let's say your case is if they have Down syndrome, we shouldn't euthanize them because we can have medical advancements that would be able to fix the situation that they're in. Well, the problem is this means that they're not genetically well off. So they will still push these. They will still reproduce these traits. And if we now become reliant on these medical advancements, we become reliant on these things, we're actually going to decrease the strength of our natural born genetics. This is very important. You have to understand that eugenics has to be bound and linked with nature. It cannot be bound and linked with advancements in medicine and science. Because if you link it with that, let's say society collapses, or like in Rome, they had technologies that we don't have today, or in Egypt, they might have had technologies we don't have today, right? If we now lose those technologies and those abilities to use those technologies, we now put ourselves in a spot where we are now a dysgenic force with no way of re-eugenicizing our people. So this might work in the short term, but this is not a long-term foresight-driven thought process. So it's very important that eugenics is specifically bound up with natural order and natural genetics. Holokoff with 100 library coins. He says, what do you call a bird with Down syndrome? A mongoose. Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Can we get the Romans in the chat for Holokoff? I do appreciate it. Yeah, I have empathy for the situation that they're in. It is an unfortunate thing. But you have to remember, in the old times, the Vikings would just have left a Down syndrome baby in the forest, which is much more cruel, or brutal, rather. It's not evil. It is brutal. It is not evil. You have to understand this. Again, this is where we go beyond good and evil. When a Viking was to leave a Down syndrome child in the woods, okay, they were being brutal, not evil. It's not evil, okay? Example, we'll use a nature-driven example. If we look at birds, we've talked about this before. If a baby bird has a broken wing, the mother bird, knowing that that baby bird will be incapable of flying south for the winter, will actually physically kick that baby bird out of the nest and leave it for death. Its own offspring, it will kick it out of the nest and leave it for death. That is not evil. We don't view that as evil. We don't say, oh, that bird is heartless and evil. It's brutal, but nature is brutal. Okay. When we watch a lion ripping a zebra's neck apart, we don't say that's evil, but it is brutal. Absolutely. It's not that Down syndrome people are a problem. I think you're misunderstanding the point. They're not a problem, but they're not a solution, so to speak. They're incapable of creating beneficial things for society. Therefore, inevitably, they will become a tax on society. Yes, eugenics is nature. That's how we got to the point we're at today, right? Especially if you believe in the theory of evolution. That's a purely eugenic theory. I know what sterilization is, my friend. I'm very familiar with sterilization, and there are cases where sterilization can be a thing, but you have to remember, yet again, the person is a tax on society. No, we're not lions, but we don't need to be lions to follow natural order. Again, this we get too wrapped up in this very I'm not going to word it the way I would like to word it, because it's going to offend, and it's going to drag this conversation into something that it shouldn't be. But we get too caught up in this worldview of good and evil, right? We think of these things as very unnuanced things that are just black and white, and there is much gray area in these circumstances. So you have to think about the common good, the collective good, right? So if you have a child with Down syndrome, what happens is this child, first off, most of these children have a hard life. I'm not saying all of them will, but most of them do, just on a broader scale, okay? The rest of society will not treat them as equal. You know, kids are harsh. They're going to bully the shit out of these kids. They are the way they are, okay? That's brutal. Yet again, it's not evil. It's brutal. It's a little bit immoral, but it's brutal, okay? So they're going to be incapable of holding a 9-to-5. They're going to be incapable of reproducing good offspring that will be good for society in the future. So therefore, they are, by definition, a tax on society. So what is more moral? We have to think about it like this. What is more moral? Removing the existence of this dysgenic force before this dysgenic force is conscious of its suffrage, or allowing this dysgenic force to tax the rest of society and hold mankind back from achieving greater things. Because it's obviously not going to be just one Down syndrome person. This spirals, right? There's a reason. Let me point something out to you guys. Okay, this is going to make a lot of sense. I need you to think about this very carefully. Okay. Think about this very carefully. How many people that are black in Africa do you see with Down syndrome? Down syndrome is almost non-existent in a place like Africa. The reason for this is their societies refuse to uphold somebody like that when they are born, right? Because their societies are incapable of doing such. So therefore, within that natural order, those people die out, and then that issue, that mutation, is now not a part of the gene pool. It's not a problem for the gene pool. So now we're starting to see blacks have Down syndrome. And if you look at this phenomena of blacks with Down syndrome, it is predominantly in the United States of America, where we prop up people with disabilities. We handicap society in order to prop them up and help them out. Okay. And now we're re-perpetrating those negative genes throughout all of society. No, there certainly are blacks with Down syndrome, but it's rare, and it's a phenomenon you see almost only in America. And this is simply because this is a place where we uplift people with mental illnesses, people with handicaps, things like that. I understand humans have emotions, but unfortunately, I'm probably not the person to discuss emotion with. I'm not a very empathetic man. Rephrase that. I'm empathetic. I'm not a very emotional man. Hence the name Logos. Right. I pull myself more in the sector of logic. Whit Sonley, a first-time chatter, he says, Logos, keep up the great work, brother. Learn Aryans. This is the key to our success. Thank you very much, brother. Greatly appreciate that. Yeah, I agree. It should be avoided through breeding. And once we... Here's the thing. Once we get to a point where these people are no longer in the gene pool, then we don't have to have these discussions. The problem is how to handle it in order to remove this from the gene pool. I'm not saying euthanasia is always necessary, but there are circumstances where I believe it's best. White nationalism, they did some. Yeah, some. Yeah, again, given the circumstance we're in, we have to recognize that tolerance and this idea of feeling for others is what produced us to come to this situation, right? We've slowly we were tolerant. We felt for the Jews who came in and were having a hard time. We felt for the ploy or the experience that these people have had throughout history. So we opened our doors to them. This is something we have a deep problem with. We do have emotions, but these emotions can actually end up becoming things that lead to our detriment. We need to look very, very clear-headedly. We have to use our full conscious and recognize that some things, if we are too emotional about them, will inevitably lead to problems in our own lives, right? So it's okay to feel for people and help people, but not at the behest of ourselves. So for example, detriment of ourselves. For example, let's go back on this explanation of good and evil, right? Morality, and talk about this, okay? What is more moral? Think closely here. Giving $5 to a homeless white crackhead on the street, or giving $5 to Thomas Sewell? Okay. Now, in a Christian worldview, many people will state, well, that homeless person, they really need that help, so we should be helping them, okay? This is in that framework of good and evil. You view it as good to help those who are having a hard time and evil to neglect them. Listen to this and pay close attention. It would be good to give the money. It would be a moral, a greater moral good, or a more just moral action to give that $5 to a man like Thomas Sewell, who will then use all of his assets, all of his livelihood, is daily and enthusiastically going to the betterment of our race and waking people up. He has active clubs. He has movements that are fixing the world that we live in. If you give it to that dysgenic force in society, if you give the dysgenic homeless crackhead $5, that crackhead, you're essentially flushing that $5 down the toilet, right? You might be helping them momentarily, but you're harming society because you're taking assets that would be great for the betterment of society, that society can use for its own betterment, and you're now weeding those assets out into the dysgenic forces of society, which will not use it to benefit society. So it's actually more immoral to give $5 to that homeless crackhead than it is to give $5 to Thomas Sewell. Okay, white nationalism, I'll touch on this. He says, would disabled veterans been subjected to death as well, even if they were disabled by serving their nation? Same question goes for workers who get injured doing their jobs. Would they have been killed, or would Germany had taken care of them? No. We're not killing people nobody was euthanized for being injured, being in like a wheelchair or something. That's not how, and especially if they were serving their country. This is purely genetic, right? We're talking about things that will then produce to the offspring. So let's say a guy was injured, his leg was shot in warfare, and he can no longer use his right leg, and he can only walk with crutches, right? So if this man can only walk with crutches, we get put in a situation where he can still have offspring, he can still do things for society, and if he has children, his children aren't going to have bum right legs, right? We're only doing this specifically in a genetical sense, recognizing if this is going to essentially pollute the gene pool, right? Go See Kyle says, Hitler was on the streets at one point. You picked a very specific case there. Yeah, but I'm not saying it would have been immoral to give Hitler $5. Hitler was also a man who was going to use that for good, so it would be a moral thing to give somebody like him $5. I'm poor. I am not a wealthy man, right? But when I get money, I'm not using that money to go buy drugs or alcohol or smoke weed or buy pornography subscriptions or go hang out at the movies or buy a Hulu subscription on my TV. I'm using that money specifically to buy books to further my education and then bring that education to the rest of the people. So you have to look at what that money will be used for. It's not about who you're giving it to. It's about where that asset is going to be perpetrated into society. Is it going to be for the betterment of society or for the worse of society? And this goes for all white nationalists, right? Let's say we have a white nationalist here who is an alcoholic and does drugs on stream, and you have one, again, who is completely stoic and pure and tries their best to be the greatest version of themselves. It's obviously more moral to give money to the one that is going to do good things with the money and not waste it on alcohol and wow, I'm sorry, this is so distracting. Brother, holy smokes, White Dog's house. I was trying to like finish my point, but you're making it hard. White Dog's house with a $100 investment. He says, Dog gives one. Another $100 investment. He says, two. And then a $250 investment. He says, three licks for you, friend. Guys, can we please get some Romans in the chat for Dog? I will absolutely 100% certainly be doing a bonus show on Sunday after that. There is no way I will deny doing that. Dog, the deal around here, my friend, is whoever is the greatest investor towards the bar when we fill that bar, which you have just done on your lonesome, whoever is the greatest investor to the stream gets to choose the type of stream I do for my Sunday bonus stream. My friend, what would you like to see for a Sunday bonus stream? I will give you the option. We could do a podcast stream like we're doing today. We can do a philosophical stream like we're doing, like we've done before. We can do just a casual hangout stream. We can do a clip stream where we watch a specific kind of a content, a movie stream. We've done those before. We can do a reading stream. I'm not too big on doing the Omegle streams anymore, but if you request it, I will consider it because this is such a generous investment. I do greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you guys again for throwing the Romans in the chat and showing him the amount of support that he has shown me. I greatly appreciate anybody who helps to maintain this channel, keep my work going. Thank you again so much, brother, for investing in me. You've done this several times now, and it is very generous every time. Thank you. Thank you greatly. I really do appreciate it. Thank you. I'm going to quickly try to finish this. There was something I really wanted to read in this.
Difficult topic to address. One great moment. Coverage as usual, Zach.
The very generous and very kind Just Give Me Some Truth, again with a very kind $100 investment, says, difficult topic to address, great coverage as usual, Zach. Thank you so much for your support. As well, and again, Dog, thank you so much. Big ones like that are I'm unbelievably grateful for something like that. Thank you, seriously. I greatly appreciate it, and let me know if you have a choice for the stream that we do Sunday. If you do not, I will kind of just go off a whim and do my own kind of a style, like I typically do. Otherwise, I will do something that you would like. He says, have you ever discussed Thomas Crowell's On Heroes, Hero Worship, and the Heroic in History? I have not. I can certainly look into that and try to cover that if possible. You okay? You all right? Sorry. Dog was panting a little bit. Thank you again to Just Give Me Some Truth and to Dog. Can we get the Romans in the chat for both of them, guys? Very, very generous. All right, let me see if we can power through this. We got 10 minutes left, and we got to end the show. I'll tell you what, since it's going really well right now, I might keep it going on Odyssey just for a little while, but it has to end on Speak Free Radio at 7. We go offline. So let me just let me finish this up as quickly as I can here. Thank you, guys. It was a very kind distraction. I really do appreciate it. Okay, Hitler says, could the Freemasons perhaps stop the war? Again, people out there say Hitler was a Freemasonic puppet. This is going to disprove that. This most noble of philanthropic institutions, who foretold the good fortune of the people louder than anyone, and who at the same time was the principal leader in promoting the war. Who, after all, are the Freemasons? You have to distinguish two grades. Now listen to this very closely, it's very important. To the lower grade in Germany belong the ordinary citizens who, through the claptrap which is served up to them, can feel themselves to be somebodies. But the responsible authorities are those many-sided folk who can stand any climate, those 300 Rathenjaus who all know each other, who guide the history of the world over the heads of kings and presidents, those who will undertake any office without scruples, who know how brutally to enslave all peoples. Once more, the Jews. So what he's saying on the bottom of the Freemasonic lodges are these people who are actual citizens that just really, like, they feel like they're enlightened and they mean something now because they're a Freemason, right? I know. I've met a lot of those people. It is true. It is absolutely true. A lot of the guys in the lower realms of Freemasonry who aren't high up in the ranks, they are delusional. They're just tricked. They're fooled, unfortunately. They're bamboozled, okay? Now, the upper-ups, they know full well what they're doing, okay? That's why they've gone to the upper-up levels. And those are the people who essentially dictate world history, as Hitler is saying, which he disagrees with. Why have the Jews been against Germany? That is made quite clear today, proved by countless facts. They use the age-old tactic of the hyena. When fighters are tired out, then go for them. Then make your harvest. In a war and revolutions, the Jew attained the unattainable. Hundreds of thousands of escaped Orientals became modern Europeans. Times of unrest produce miracles. Before 1914, how long would it have taken, for instance, in Bavaria before a Galatian Jew became prime minister? Listen to this one, folks. Or in Russia before an anarchist from the New York ghetto, Bronstein, became dictator? Only a few wars and revolutions. That was enough to put the Jewish people into possession of the red gold, and thereby to make them masters of the world. Before 1914, there were two states above all, Germany and Russia, which prevented the Jew from reaching his goal, the mastery of the world. Here, not everything which they already possessed in the Western democracies had fallen to the Jews. Here, they were not the sole lords alike in the intellectual and economic life, like they are today. Here, too, the parliaments were not yet exclusively instruments of Jewish capital and of the will of the Jew. In both peoples, there still lived the healthy instinct of scorn for the Jew. And there was a real danger that in these monarchies, there might one day rise a Friedrich the Great, a William I, and that democracy and a parliamentary regime might be sent to the devil. See that? So the Jews became revolutionaries. The Republic should bring them to wealth and to power. This aim they disguised. They cried, "Down with the monarchies! Enthrone the sovereign people!" I do not know whether today one could venture to call the German or the Russian people sovereign. At least one cannot see any trace of it. What the German people can trace, however, what every day stands in the most crass form before its eyes, is debauchery, gluttony, speculation, ruling unchecked, the open mockery of the Jew. This is, again, very prescient to what we experience today. So Russia and Germany had to be overthrown in order that the ancient prophecy might be fulfilled. So the whole world was lashed into fury. So every lie and propaganda agency was brutally set into action against the state of the last, the German idealists. And thus it was that Judah won the World War. Or would you wish to maintain that the French, the English, or the American people won the war? They, one and all, victors and vanquished, are alike defeated. One thing raises itself above them all: the World Stock Exchange, which has become the master of the people. What guilt had Germany herself for the outbreak of the war? Her guilt consisted in this: that at the moment when the ring closed about her existence, Germany neglected to organize her defense with such vigor that through this demonstration of her power, either the others, despite their abominable purposes, would have been robbed of their will to strike, or else the victory of the Reich would have been assured. And we'll stop it there. We don't need to go further. There's a little bit left, but we pretty much covered it all. Those are the really important keys. Again, I want to link you guys this website where you can find these speeches. This is derfuhrer.org. Okay, all of these speeches are here. You can view all of them yourself in your free time. And I'll tell you, they are very precedent, very important. It's very important that you take your time to read some of these. You'll learn a lot just from understanding the early worldview of Adolf Hitler. Thank you guys so much for the kind words, for the investments tonight. We're coming up on the last 4 minutes of the show. It's going to end up closing out on Speak Free Radio, But I think I might stay live a little bit longer since we had some very generous donations. Maybe like another 15, 20 minutes, something like that, before we head out and just kind of discuss a little bit of things. And then we are going to head out. But before we do that, I just want to say goodbye to the Speak Free Radio folks. And folks on the Speak Free Radio, if you want to continue to tune in for a little bit longer, you can hop over onto Odyssey or GTV, whichever you prefer. It's goyamtv.com. You can find me at Logos Revealed on there. Or on Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-E-E.com. You can find me also at Logos Revealed. You can find me live right now, obviously, and additionally in the future, you can find all of my rebroadcasts. Every single stream that I do ends up getting put onto both websites and is archived indefinitely. In the event that for some reason I was to be banned from Odyssey or something of the sort, I have a backup archive of all of my files, and I would surely re-upload them to a different platform, so my content is forever in existence. Don't forget, if you guys do want to really get this content out there, if you think that this content is important, the best thing you can do, aside from financially supporting the show, is share the show. Take the 2 seconds. This is free to do. It's easy to do. And take my Twitter. Go on my Twitter. Take some of my posts where I'm posting in my Logos Academy series, for example, or a couple clips pulled directly from my show. Go ahead and take those and repost those onto your Twitter timeline. Quote them with a comment as to why you think they're important. Something of the sort. Sharing it like that does several things. One, it helps spread my specific work. And two, it helps spread our collective cohesive message to the people that are uninformed. And the more that this becomes a social norm to discuss and talk about for these people, the more comfortable and likely they will be to start looking into it and talking about it themselves. Bigot Smalls with a $5 investment. He says, for the serious. Thank you so much, my friend. Can we get the Romans in the chat for Bigot Smalls? Thank you, brother. Right for Whites, thank you. I'll try to remember. If you message me, I will 100% remember. By the way, if you guys want to help me in some way, if you want to work with me in some way, if you want to talk to me, you just want an opinion on things. I've had a lot of people actually message me, Logos, what's your opinion on A? What's your opinion on B? You know, how do you feel about this? You can feel free if you have an inquiry to message me. You know, don't be sending me like, a novel about something. But if you have like an inquiry or a question, you want my specific opinion, you can always message me privately. I get back to everybody as best I can. It's hard sometimes. I have people, and please don't take this the wrong way if you are one of those people. I have people that send me a lot of messages at once, and they'll do it like, instead of writing one paragraph, they'll send like 8 different messages, and they're all different like psychological points. I'm a very philosophically analytical person. I can't respond to things like, I'm incapable of responding to things like that, because I will take one piece and I want to go on a whole thought train on that piece, and then I have to take the next piece, and then I'm going to have to do that 8 times. So if you have something you want to express with me, if you have something you want my opinion on, I am more than willing, more than comfortable to give that to you, but just please try to make it concise and into just one body paragraph so I can assess it appropriately and give a real full intellectual take on it. Otherwise, it's really hard to for me to do that. Yes, I have looked into Jonathan Bowden, yes. Yes, I have. It's okay, Jack. There's a couple people that do it. You are guilty, I'll be honest. I'm not mad about it. It's just you're less likely to get like genuine good responses from me because it's harder for me to do it. So I'll end up just sending kind of like one all-encompassing response where I'm like, yeah, you know, that's good. Okay. But if you give like one solid thing, I can really dig into it, and I'll end up sending like, 5-10 minute message about it, because it's something I can address in a better format where my thoughts aren't being dragged in different directions in that way. Yeah, Ryan, I agree, brother. By the way, Speak Free Radio folks, we are probably going offline right now. Thank you guys for tuning in. I will catch you guys next week on Tuesday, 5 p.m. Eastern, as usual. Continuing the Odyssey and the GTV stream. Yeah, Ryan, I completely agree with you. Ryan says, it's pretty cool that we were able to debate the euthanasia question like white men and didn't descend into name-calling and hurt feelings. You will find on my show, and I hope to see this spread like a sickness to the rest of our community. I do not argue. I will never insult. I'll insult Jews. You know, it's more of a humor factor when I do it, to be entirely honest, or when I insult blacks. More times than not, it's a humor factor. Actually, I very rarely insult blacks, right? Typically, I give a logical analysis. Unfortunately, those things seem insulting to those who are maybe uneducated, but I don't really do insults. The only people I insult are Jews, and this is a tactic of normalizing, you know, not giving a shit about what these people think, because they truly are vehemently against us. I don't believe in insults, especially not against our own people. I got guys in our movement I vehemently disagree with, and I absolutely distaste. I am super distasteful towards their views and their methods. Okay. It exists, right? I don't talk about it. I don't push my views on them. I allow them to do their thing. If I am right and they are wrong, why would I argue with them? Why would I insult them? Does that make me look any more correct? No, it makes me look worse, right? So if I am right and they are wrong, my work and my ideas, the truth of what I am saying, will prevail over top of them, and therefore there is no need for a disagreement and an argument to occur. It's not necessary. Right, I don't believe in arguments. I don't believe in ad hominems, especially with our own people. I believe it's unproductive. We are in a goddamn war right now, and it's like a guy in the trenches complaining about how you hold your gun while you're in the middle of a gunfight. Right, it's ridiculous. You know, leave the guy to do his thing. If he's wrong, we can analyze it after in a cohesive, calm manner. I also don't believe in, like, anger. You know, I believe in passion. I get passionate, right? I get passionate on my shows about what these Jews are doing and waking people up to it. I don't get angry. I don't believe in anger and boiling yourself up. When you get angry, the only person you hurt via that anger is yourself. You're not hurting anybody else, right? It's not wise. I agree, Rights for Whites. I do agree. I don't think we're descending. I think we're ascending. We were in the cave. I think we're coming out of the cave. It's discipline, right? The greatest men in the entirety of Aryan history have been men of discipline. To sling shit at people in your own movement because you disagree with their takes or you disagree with things they do, no matter how harshly you disagree with them, that is undisciplined behavior. A disciplined man gives his critique in a logical and calm manner and does not allow his emotions to get the best of him. Discipline is of the utmost importance. Urban, I will be uploading that Ryan interview tomorrow. Tonight. I can upload it tonight. I'll probably upload it tonight. I'll try my best. No promises, though. I might upload it tomorrow. I'm going to upload this show right after it's done. I might upload tomorrow, the Ryan stream. It is, Ryan, it is. Chunks of rage held together with anger. What am I going to do now? In all truth, I preach this very heavily, and I'm a person who practices what I preach for the most part. I'm not going to say I don't make mistakes. I certainly do. We all do. But I am a massive, massive proponent of Stoicism. Read up on Stoicism. It will make you a better man. Whether you want to think that or not, whether you really believe it or not, take the time. Study it. Don't just, you know, pick up the book and scroll through it. Study it. Really think about the things that are being put across in these books. Study Stoicism, and you will 100% become a better man. While we're on this topic, really quickly, I'll give a couple book recommendations, just for those who might be interested. If you are a hothead and you are trying to fix that and make yourself more calm in these conversations, believe it or not, okay, when I was just 20 years old, 21, it's 4 or 5 years ago, I was the most egregious hothead ever. You could not have a discussion with me without me losing my cool, flipping my lid, breaking shit, acting like a fucking child. Terrible way to live your life. It only hurts yourself. All you do is destroy your inner feeling for yourself, and it will lead to depressed mindset as well. It's a very negative way to live your life. It's not helpful. Stoicism and reading up on it has greatly helped me. I'm going to show you guys the books that have helped me. One moment, I will be right back. Okay, I am back. I do not meditate, no. I would like to. It's going to sound kind of idiotic, but I don't feel like I have the time. I'm always doing something. I am terrible at sitting still and not doing something. I know it would be better for my mental health, most likely, but it's a very hard thing for me to do. Okay, so I'm going to give you guys three recommendations for books that I recommend, specifically on the topic of stoicism and making yourself a little more at ease within your own mind. We've got Seneca, Letters from a Stoic. It's a short book, easy book, and it's just Seneca writing letters to friends, family, things of the sort, with his Stoic viewpoints and his take on things. And in this book, it's essentially like he's writing them to you. Take it like that, and through that, you'll kind of take up that mindset on your own. I don't know where my physical copy is, but also Marcus Aurelius Meditations, everybody recommends that. It's a little more mainstream, which makes me dislike it more. There's like weird, you know, liberal fags and stuff who like promote that book, and I just don't like the fact that they're promoting it. It makes it even less attractive for me. But you know, it is what it is. I think it's quite clear why Garden's I don't really hit the gym all that often, my friend. I work this thing out. All of my time is spent working out the brain. I'm not much of a gym guy. I go on a jog and stuff from time to time, and I keep up my physical health. I'm not an unhealthy person, but I'm not a kind of person who is like working on my physique at all. I'm a very scrawny person. We got on Cicero on Living and Dying Well. It's a really good book as well. Cicero is one of my favorite, actually probably my second favorite Stoic. I think he is very brilliant, and you will actually recognize when you read Cicero something that's really interesting is pre-Christian, his writings. They're pre-Christian, but you'll see a lot of Christian sentiment in these writings, things that are echoed in Christianity, which shows you that there are some things in Christianity that are certainly of that Aryan spirit. They're existent. I don't think all of Christianity is, but they are certainly existent within it. Very good book. Definitely recommend this one. It's another pretty short one. And then the man I would consider my favorite Stoic, although he's not described as a Stoic by modern academia, although he definitely was one, would be... I will say Socrates, but I guess essentially we mean Plato because all of his works live through Plato. But Socrates. So this book, The Republic by Plato, is 100% the greatest book I can ever recommend to anybody for many reasons. For the fact that it will improve your own mental health and outlook on virtue and how to live your life appropriately. B, it will show you that the things that we're living in today are products of human nature, and it's something that existed all the way back then, and it's our duty as Aryan men to morph around that and fix the ills of human nature. And for the third part, it's just a very cultured book that is very linked with our history, right? Pretty much all of Western philosophy in some way references or stems from this book, absolutely. Whether you read Nietzsche, whether you read Rousseau, who we're reading right now, Machiavelli, you read the Founding Fathers of America, all of them at some point or another reference Plato, and they reference the allegory of the cave and the Republic. So Very good book. My this is my second favorite book, second to Mein Kampf, which is it's hard for me to place Mein Kampf over this, to be entirely honest with you, only because of the exact time period we live in. That's the only reason I place Mein Kampf ahead of the Republic. If we lived in a good state and Jews weren't subverting our nation and we were a happy homogenous society, this would be my favorite book and my most highly recommended. But because of where we are, I think that Mein Kampf is much more prescient for our times, certainly. Yeah, we'll see, Gosika. We'll see. It's just not a big thing for me. Anger is addictive because anger is subconscious, right? So this is something that Stoics and all philosophy teaches. Is living your life consciously instead of unconsciously, right? So the difference between man and animal is that man is able to make conscious decisions. However, we not so frequently do we actually make those conscious decisions, right? Most of the decisions man make are subconscious decisions, such as lighting a cigarette or going out and getting drunk with some buddies. We don't really think about if or if not that is a good decision to make. We don't weigh the decision. We don't actually sit and ponder upon how good that decision will be for us. We do these things almost robotically, such as, scrolling YouTube is a really good example, right? You watch a short and you go to the next one, 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 you go to the next one. And before you know it, 2 hours have passed. This is a subconscious behavior, right? One thing grabs your attention, it just boop, 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 boop. It pulls your psyche in all these different directions. Very subconscious, also very bad for your attention span as well. And the more you do that, the more you spend time on YouTube scrolling like that and doing things that are absolutely destroying your attention span, the harder it's going to be to read. The absolute harder it's going to be to read. When I first started picking up books, I couldn't focus. I'd read the page and I'm like, okay. All right, I finished that page. I don't even remember what I just read. That didn't resonate. Then I got to read it again. Then I'd be like, okay, I kind of get it, but I'm like blanking out on that. Then I got to read it again. Now I can read a book. I still can't do like a, you know, I can't read super long winded, but I can read like 20 to 40 pages at a time without stopping. I still read back and analyze things. I study books. You have to study books. You can't just read them. If you really want to take in the information and understand it, you have to study them. I definitely have gotten better at reading. It's a muscle. Your brain is a muscle. You got to work it out. You have to practice and get better with it. Certainly. Okay, guys. I think that's gonna end the show. I think that's everything I really wanted to cover. I just wanted to go for another extra 15 minutes, just because you guys were so generous today. The viewership was phenomenal. You guys with those very kind donations again. Dog, just give me some truth. Thank you guys so much. And Big and Smalls, I absolutely do not forget those small donations. They mean a lot as well. Thank you, my friend. I greatly appreciate everybody who's been supporting this show, keeping me going. And to be honest with you, it means a great deal to me to have people finding importance in the work I am doing. To me, this is the only thing in the entire world that I am genuinely passionate about, and it's the only thing that I believe is correct to do at this time for anybody, really. So it's very fulfilling inwardly in my soul to have people appreciating something that I am so passionate about and something that I revere as of the highest importance. That's very important to me. So thank you guys again so much for everything. Hangman, if you want to know when I'm going live, schedule is posted every single week on Gab and pinned right at the top. Every single week, I post my schedule on Gab and pin it at the top. If something alters in that schedule, I always post on Gab to clarify and let people know why something has changed. Alrighty, thank you guys again so much for watching. I really do appreciate it. I appreciated everything in the last year or so. Only up from here, right? Only up from here, guys. Keep this message spreading. Have a wonderful night, folks. I will see you guys Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern. See you, folks. Thank you again.